Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
Back to the regular order.
I kind of choked, actually. I wanted to be second or first.
Maybe next time.
So, what's going on, guys?
A lot. I saw Angel Wars.
Angel Wars.
Yeah. Which, to our outside Japan audience, would be known as Sucker Punch.
Cool. Yeah, I heard about that.
I don't...
Oh, is that what they called it? Oh, okay. Yeah. So it's in the theaters here?
Yes.
Oh.
Unsurprising, really. Blonde girl, katana.
Wearing
school uniform.
Yeah, wearing a sailor school uniform. Yeah.
I think those three things, that's probably the biggest selling point.
Yeah. I think it was. But, yeah, I'm not exactly sure why it would have been called Sucker Punch or Angel Wars.
Actually, the review I read of it.
Because she's as beautiful as an angel.
Yeah,
not,
no?
I don't know.
That was a rhetorical question. It wasn't for people to answer because, in my opinion, there wasn't a war going on and...
The review I read of it was saying that Sucker Punch is a pretty apt title because, like, the movie Sucker Punches you with the twist in it, which I don't know what it is.
Sucks you into going to see it, and then you're like, oh, Zack Snyder again? Oh, I should learn.
So, not good then, huh?
I heard a different review, and they say the twist was pretty meh.
Mm. Yeah, I agree that...
The sucker punch is that you're expecting the big twist because you maybe read or saw that review that you did.
Yeah.
But then when you get it, you're like, oh, that's the... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not really much a punch. Just like a...
Not really a twist, more of a bend.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what it was. It was kind of like a bend because, like, at the end of the movie, I didn't go...
This movie whips around, like, 30 degrees.
Yeah, I didn't go, like, oh, my God, I didn't see that coming. It was just like, yeah, no, okay, kind of expected that, you know. I mean, and it wasn't even like they telegraphed the end, you know? It wasn't like an M. Night Shyamalan movie where you're like, oh, God, right?
That one M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Well, okay, fine. But still, it was, how to put it politely, it was, I don't know. It was what it was. It was a lot of...
You don't have to pull your sucker punches.
It was a lot of girls in, like, tight-fitting outfits with big guns and swords.
So I suppose it's one of those things, if that's enough to make a movie for you, then you'll enjoy it.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that's why people go to see it. Apart from that, I still thought it was all right.
So, spoiler alert to everybody listening, what was the twist? Since I'm not going to see it.
Man, you just don't watch any movies, do you?
Whatever this.
Yeah, spoiler alert.
Should we say when they should come back? And come back in 5 minutes.
Wait, are we going to finish in 5 minutes?
Yeah, I think so. We'll finish the
All right, start timing.
Come back in 5 minutes.
Please. Okay, so come back in 5 minutes. Yeah, it actually maybe even less because the twist is the main character, Baby Doll, played by Emily Browning, who looks quite young. What are you laughing for?
Tight uniforms, katanas, blonde girls, and Baby Doll is the name.
Yeah. No, not tight uniforms. Very short skirt uniforms. So anyway, she's in a mental institution. Not exactly sure why. And
that's the twist?
Can I finish my story?
No.
All right. So I guess it's more of a synopsis.
I think you're finishing Zack Snyder's story.
Yeah, okay, fine. So she's in a mental institution, and she's going to break out. And the twist is she creates this imaginary world. And then at the end of the movie, I guess that the twist is you're not supposed to be sure sort of what was imaginary and what was not.
Okay.
Oh, that's a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's kind of like... Every movie that has an imaginary world and a real world together, Inception.
This one actually had two. It had like the real world and an imaginary world, and then like an imaginary world kind of in that imaginary world.
Oh, I see. So like Inception, different layers.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like pretense and then layer of bullshit, and another layer of nothing.
Yeah. Just kidding. Yeah, just shovel on more bullshit. But anyway, it was entertaining.
Okay.
I mean that's all you could really go at it. I guess I was watching it. A little bit to see how they did the imaginary world, since I was kind of thinking about...
Changeling?
Yeah, exactly.
Been a lot on our thoughts of late.
Yeah.
But I heard Carla Gugino is in that movie. So but she's not one of the crazy girls, right?
No, another spoiler, she's like one
of the...
Is she
in the real world and in the fantasy world, or is she only in the fantasy world?
She's in the real world and one of the imaginary worlds.
So she's like the nurse? In the real world?
In the real world, she's like one of the psychiatrists or psychiatric workers that are sort of working with these people. Mm-hmm. And then in the imaginary world, which is kind of like a 1920s, I guess, burlesque house, she's the dance instructor.
Oh, okay. So, and then like Abby Cornish and Vanessa Hudgens are, they're also patients in this place?
Yes, they're all patients in the ward.
But Emily Browning is the one that's having the dream.
Yeah, I guess you're not really sure. Kind of what happens is, like, yeah, all these five girls are in this sort of mental institution, even though in sort of Emily Browning's imaginary world, they're all kind of dancers in this burlesque show that's run by a, kind of like a mobster, and they're being held there against their will.
Is that John Hamm?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then in the secondary imaginary world, they're all kind of fighters, I guess.
Oh, okay.
So.
Is Zack Snyder, like, 12?
Probably.
You're like burlesque show, and then they put on sailor uniforms to get tough.
Yeah.
And go to war.
Now, only Emily Browning wore the
sailor. Now we go to war.
Get on this lingerie, girls.
Yeah.
Get in the short skirt.
Yeah.
Trying to suit up.
It was like, yeah.
Yeah, get out of this constraining lingerie. Put on the more free-flowing sailor outfit.
Yeah.
We're in the Navy now, ladies.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. I thought the imaginary worlds were kind of cool.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Because they're about four different ones, and they all sort of corresponded to this item they were trying to get. And that's how they were going to get out. So each little sort of secondary imaginary world kind of revolved around this item that they had to get. And of course, it didn't look like it did in the real world.
Well, how did it display them in each world?
I forget what the first ones were. Well, so the first one, they had to get a map, mm-hmm. I think. And so the imaginary world was kind of like a steampunk World War II sort of thing. And these clockwork Nazis had a map, and they had to go get this map before the courier took
So in the fantasy world, the map was
a map. Yeah, all right.
It's very interesting how they changed that.
All right!
Oh, what a twist. Yeah.
So in one of the other ones, they had to
find this key that they imagined was a key.
Did you want to hear the next one?
Yeah. I have more fun giving you crap.
Yeah, I know.
What was the next one?
The next one was they had to get a lighter, and which was a dragon in the imaginary world.
Okay.
And,
but wasn't the dragon on the lighter?
Maybe I'm imagining it differently, but I thought it was. Well,
we're talking about the movie's imaginary world, not your imaginary
yes,
world.
Yes, yes. We're talking. Funny.
The imaginary world that you made up afterwards.
Because the movie was so boring.
I actually penned a script while I was
I don't know. I thought the dragon was kind of interesting because they actually had to, like, recover these, like, two stones from the dragon's sort of neck, which kind of were like the flint inside a lighter.
As soon as you said two stones, I'm like, oh, yeah. Flint.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, Lyle's not impressed.
I didn't get it. I was imagining precious stones, but
no, because they actually, you know, strike them together and make fire, so I still thought it was kind of interesting.
Okay.
Well, so, watch it, don't watch it.
And welcome back, people that skipped it.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then everybody died.
Yeah. Actually, you're not far off, all right.
Oh, thanks.
But
just kidding about that everybody dying part. Yeah. Welcome back.
I'll say, yeah.
Not that it matters for me, but
yeah, watch it with the caveat that you will be watching a lot of attractive women in practically nothing with big guns and swords doing outrageous
couldn't
things.
Couldn't you just say, like, isn't this the movie that Zack Snyder wrote? And I hesitate to say his first original screenplay because it doesn't sound terribly original, but if you like Zack Snyder movies and you're watching Watchmen and 300 and go, you know, I'd really like to see
what he can
more
do
of this director's vision, then there you go, Sucker Punch.
Yeah. Good special effects, nice soundtrack. Same soundtrack by the guy who did 300. Tyler Bates, which I quite liked.
Kind of a rock soundtrack.
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool.
All right. Well, today we're going to talk about... Yeah, it's kind of a clumsy saying, but...
it isn't.
Oh, thanks for that, Wayne.
That was Chris!
No.
Oh, thanks for me for doing Sucker Punch? Yeah, fine.
Wow, this is not helping the seg at all. We're going to talk about Ball of Twine and sandbox-style games. So basically, Ball of Twine is what we call, some people might call it a more linear style game or a railroad style game, which I guess has more of a negative connotation. And sandbox, we'll say maybe more open, but also maybe the definition is a little open. So What do you guys think is a sandbox game? What would you say is a ball of twine game?
Are you looking for like examples or of the?
How would you define it?
Oh, okay. All right, I used to go with.
What's a sandbox game to you guys?
Sandbox is you set up sort of the world and sort of these characters inside a world, but maybe you don't really have a story that you want to tell to the players. And then you just sort of put the players inside this setting, and you say, go kind of make your own story.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good definition.
I'm going to disagree with both of you then.
Okay, can I say why it's called Sandbox first?
Okay, now I was hoping that you would do that straight away.
Sorry, because if you think about like a sandbox, right? Yeah. As a kid, you go play in the sandbox. There's no rules, or there's no correct way to play in the sandbox. You just go into a sandbox and do whatever you want.
Well, I'd hate to be in the sandboxes in your childhood.
There weren't sandboxes in my childhood because they were full of crack
needles.
How do you
know there's no rules?
I don't know.
Don't pick up the crack needles.
Yeah, the rules are don't pick up the crack needles, you know. Leave the 9mm shell casings alone.
Yeah. I don't think that sandbox means that there's no story.
Okay.
No, I would actually say, kind of skipping ahead in the episode, but maybe that's kind of a potential danger of sandbox is people think, okay, I've created the environment, I've got the NPCs, now go. And a lot of times players will just kind of look around. I think sandbox is basically a story, a game, mm-hmm. that the game master has established. But there's multiple ways to accomplish the goal. Hmm. So there's like some sort of planned ending, not like it has to end this way, but basically there is some sort of story, but there's multiple ways in which to accomplish it and do it. And I would bring up just reading some stuff in preparation for the episode, such as the 4E Dungeon Master's Guide. Mm. And James Wyatt is talking about super adventures. Mm-hmm. And he described the Dwellers of the Forbidden City as the proto super adventure. Mm-hmm. And the reason was because he said if you look at there's like 4 different ways to get down this volcano, uh-huh. this crater. And each way can lead to different adventures and results. So the players are choosing how the story is unfolding. Mm-hmm. So when he was talking about that in Super Adventures, but I was thinking that a super adventure, in the way he's defining it, to me is like a sandbox in that you've created the environment, you've created the crater, let's say. Mm-hmm. But there isn't one way for the players to go down that crater. They could go down all these different ways. And each way they go down this crater is going to lead to a different adventure.
That's really interesting, actually. I do disagree with you on that, in that I see like Twine linear adventures as being goal-driven. Like the players have a set place that the DM created beforehand that he expects mm-hmm. Wants them to go to. Whereas Sandbox I see is more adventure-driven. It's more about exploration and finding their own things. Like I don't think
It sounds like you're agreeing with me, though.
Here's
the crater, but there is a story.
See, the thing is...
If you say there's no story on a sandbox, then it's like, here's a crater and go do whatever, and the players like walk away from the crater.
Yes, I
And you're like, well, the story is actually in that crater.
I agree.
There's a bunch of different ways in which to explore it. But, sorry, go on.
I don't think that a sandbox lacks a story, and I agree that it shouldn't lack a story. That's just a trap. But I think that...
Well, that's what I was taking issue with, is saying that it's just the setting and NPCs, and there's no story. I think there is a story. I mean, why are you a storyteller, to get technical? It's because you're telling a story. Mm-hmm. It's just that... maybe if we back up, and what would you say is a ball of twine?
Ball is that where there is a set destination. And, mm-hmm. of course, like it can change and be redefined as the game goes on. But from the very beginning, GM has the idea that here is where the players start, here is where they're going to end. And it depends on how linear he wants it to be, but there mm-hmm. could be like steps along the way or hell, even a straight railroad the whole way. Whereas for Sandbox, I see maybe there's not an ending defined.
Like, I agree. Like, there's a beginning and an end for a ball of twine, but I think what makes it a ball of twine is the encounters are basically pre-established by the game master prior to the, like, in advance.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I didn't say in advance, I said pre-established. It's like, there might be some sidetracks and that the player can go off where they do their own thing for a little bit, but it's not really taking away from the, like, a minor subplot, mm-hmm. but it's not taking away from the basic plot. Basically, all the major encounters and events in the story uh-huh. have already been laid out by the game master, and a good game master helps to guide the players to those major events and major encounters uh-huh. so they don't feel like they're being railroaded like on like a train and they can't get off.
I think that jumps ahead, but I have a question. Not having read Dwellers of the Forbidden City, is getting to the bottom of the crater the end of the adventure?
No, I think it's the main thing. I haven't played it either.
Well, okay, so out of curiosity, because I think I agree with what Chris is saying. Like, in that example, if the players start at the beginning of, or start at the top of the crater,
mm-hmm.
and the goal of this that little section or episode is for them to get to the bottom, and there's multiple ways for them to get there,
yeah.
to me that just sounds like a slightly better planned out ball of twine.
Yes.
Because there's a definite beginning, there's a definite ending, and
so you're saying a sandbox has no ending? So you just
I'm not saying a sandbox has no ending. But
you actually did say that. I say you have a definite goal in a sandbox. That's the story. You have
maybe
a beginning
ending
and
is a poor word, but goal.
Right.
I don't know. The way
so
I
okay, back up. Okay. Does sandbox have a story? Is there a story?
I hope so, yeah.
Okay, well then we're in agreement there.
Okay.
Is there like kind of an end? Like does the game master make a major villain in a sandbox game?
He can, yeah.
Okay, so if
I would say no,
they don't make a major villain. So there's no.
Well, that depends up to the storyteller, of course.
So you would, okay? What kind of story wouldn't have a major villain in it?
Well, I think maybe villain is tough because it depends a lot on the story, but. I would see a sandbox as having a conflict versus a linear one where a ball of twine, which would have a goal. In the sandbox, this is the problem. Good luck in solving it.
But then solving that goal is the goal in a sandbox.
Right. Whereas in linear, it would be here's the start, here's the finish, and this is how you solve the goal. There's a set path.
I think maybe the conflict we're getting here is how the
problems
are solved.
The conflict started because you said that a sandbox is there's no story. And there are no rules.
Well, an actual literal sandbox has no story and no rules. Right?
Okay, but we're not talking about playing in a sandbox.
All right.
Versus sitting at a table and playing role-playing games.
I thought you were going to say sitting at a table unrolling a ball of yarn. But
maybe this can get a little bit more consensus. We got Ball of Twine from GURPS Mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
The writer there, she used that analogy to describe like a more linear style game,
mm-hmm.
and as this title will suggest, it is about mysteries and how to feed out the clues, and she contrasted that with what she called like a jigsaw style,
mm-hmm.
and she used an Agatha Christie example with the Detective Poirot throws all these different clues and uh-huh. says now we have to figure out these are all the clues that we have now we have to figure out what these mean, and to me that's like a sandbox, that jigsaw puzzle style of game, is that all the clues are prepared, but the players can then assemble these clues in any order. Whereas in the Ball of Twine, not only are all the clues prepared, but the order in which you basically get these clues is determined by the Ball of Twine, by the game master in advance, and the players don't have control about how they get
them. I think we all agree on that, which is right. why... And I think Chris started to say it too, is why...
But both of these have goals.
But I think it's more how you solve the problem.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all.
Or how you approach the situation.
Like, if you go back to the crater, how you get down to the crater is, in a sense, how you're solving
I think that
problem.
Example is where Wayne and I differ with you. In that,
but I disagreed even before I brought up that example.
I think...
Because when heard, no story, and then now I'm not clear, no ending, no goal.
So when you're saying that the goal is to get to the bottom of this crater, and then the adventure has four different paths for it.
Right.
I still see that as being a ball of twine, but perhaps there's several different strings to get to the end.
Sure.
I'd imagine sandbox more as your goal is to get to the bottom of the crater, and there isn't a path. The players just figure out and or make it up on the way.
Yeah, I think that if there are four defined points, or four defined sort of start positions...
Or paths or whatever
that the players could use to get down to
but then you make a city, you've made this city that the players are playing in or whatever. It is defined. It doesn't matter if it's sandbox. You've confined the setting because you haven't made every building.
Right, of course. But the difference is that when in a ball of twine, when they go to the city, there's one main thoroughfare. It may twist and turn, but that's all that the players are going to see in the city. Whereas in the sandbox, you've created the city, and of course you haven't defined everything, but it's up to the players where they want to go.
Yeah, I guess you use a city example, like a ball of twine would be maybe like as soon as the players walk through the gate of the city,
well,
they meet
in this
NPC
adventure,
A.
There's all these different hooks.
I finished my point.
No, because it's all right. Like,
you just said no. You can't finish.
Damn it!
You started all this. With your,
yeah, I started
no,
all this.
Started,
I'd like to get a word in edgewise. There are three of us here. So anyway, back to my city thing. Like, if the players walk through the gate and they immediately meet NPC A or an event happens that then sort of either forces them to do something where they have to go to the next point, mm-hmm. that to me would be ball of twine, right? They kind of don't have any. They don't have any. Well, I guess their freedom would be they could ignore those things. But whereas opposed to like a sandbox thing is they walk into a city mm-hmm. And the GM says, okay, where do you want to go?
I think maybe
or
we just have a...
But then what are they doing in the city? I think what you're describing, and what I want to do is, I don't want to describe a bad sandbox game and use that as a definition. I don't want to use a bad ball of twine game as the definition, because I would say you walk into the city, what are they doing in the city?
Well, all right, so to like, use very general
to the
examples.
Players, okay, you start in the city, what do you want to do?
That would be a bad...
I guess that would fall on the edge of a sandbox
definition, but
I would say that really shouldn't be a sandbox game.
Okay,
if all you think is that you've provided the players with a city.
What I'm getting out of this conversation is that there's
we
a
disagree?
Gray scale between sandbox
there's
and
definitely,
linear,
yeah.
And we just have a different point where we're cutting it off.
So, okay, I'll see if you agree with this. Maybe sandbox would be more player-driven in that the storyteller or the GM
kind of
reacts a bit more to what the players do. And
it's more reactive.
And it's more reactive. Whereas in a ball of twine story, it's the players who are more reactive.
Yeah, I would say like ball of twine is more difficult to plan. Mm-hmm. Like a good ball of twine is more difficult to plan because again, you don't want the players to feel like they're being railroaded to each encounter. But it's easier to run. Whereas a sandbox is, I guess, easier to plan, but then it's more difficult to run because then it is very reactive to what they do. Because again, because the danger in the sandbox, if it isn't, if you lazily run it, mm-hmm. then the players are like, oh, I want to do this. And then it's very, like, it's basically lurching from uninteresting encounter to uninteresting encounter, and the game just kind of meanders. Whereas in a bad ball of twine, it's like you get on the car on the roller coaster and it just goes, mm-hmm. and nothing you could do. You can't go, I want to get off now.
With the D&D game we played, I set it up to where I had like four or five different major points along the story. Like at this point, the players are going to have battle in the Elven
City. It's really good. Can we just summarize for our listeners? What have we agreed on?
Oh,
for sandbox is basically reactive, and
it's
more open and player driven.
Yeah,
style of game. It does have a story. There's some consensus there.
Oh yes, any game
some sort
should
of,
have a story.
Right, good. And there's an ending goal.
No, that I just
what word were you guys kind of agreeing on there?
Not necessarily, but I think
conclusion is better. Because if you have
okay.
a story, oh jeez, man, that eye roll did not translate to audio.
I was trying to put the eye roll in my voice, in my tone.
Anyway, I could hear it.
and then. I guess a ball of twine then is more planned out, more linear style of game, and I guess more game master driven.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And of course, again, it has a story and a conclusion.
We have split so many hairs.
Sorry to cut you off. I just wanted
I
didn't want people going.
Yeah, for the D&D game we played a little bit ago, would you call that sandbox or ball of twine?
I'd say that's closer to ball of twine. Yeah.
Okay. Because the same thing, when I was creating it, I was thinking that it was very linear. But the way you're saying, like, with the crater example, it sounded almost like you were, like, that would be defined as sandbox. Because I didn't have a set way for you guys to get to the ending.
I disagree
mm-hmm. because of the way you set up how we could get the clues mm-hmm. to discover the main villain's mm-hmm. identity. It seemed it was like we'd have to go from this NPC mm-hmm. then to the next NPC, then to the next NPC.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also
the events as well.
The events seem to be staggered, of course. And I heard someone say, remember that Tom used to play with us, mm-hmm. Or one of the Toms, he said that you can't sandbox 4E. And he didn't say anything beyond that. He just went, can't sandbox 4E, and we happened to be playing it at the time, so no one actually saw what he mean by that, or no one nodded assent or anything.
I don't remember saying that, but...
Yeah, I remember saying that.
Yeah, well, and, like, I when I was making it, I was considering it very, very ball of twine.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, kind of the NPCs and the events, we kind of had to do them, like, in a specific order.
Yeah. There was room for side treks, because side treks in that...
But yeah, between point A and point B, we could kind of...
And I should clarify, James Wyatt never dropped the word sandbox or anything. He was talking about super adventures in this. But when I was reading how he was defining it, to me it seemed, if not sandbox, at least a mixed format of the two.
Hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
I tend to think most games would be a mix
of the two. No, because we just played... I would think that a lot of games are ball of twine. I would say if people go to conventions, they play a ball of twine style game.
I think so, and I think it'd almost be impossible to do a sandbox in a 4-hour game format.
Well, I didn't mean a 50-50 mix, but I mean... like
most
games would be a mix, because if you think about
not a 50-50.
Yeah, not a 50-50. Right. In my opinion, maybe somewhere I'm wrong. I often am, according to you, Lyle. In my opinion... Exactly.
I'm not going to apologize. You said no story.
And all right.
No, I'm sorry. I'm with Wayne.
Look at my notes here. I say...
Did you transcribe what
does
I wrote?
Not mean no story.
Okay, fine.
No, but I anticipated saying, oh, it doesn't mean a story.
Right. My point is...
Sorry.
A purely ball of twine story would be sort of like a railroad, right? The players cannot get off. You know, a very simplified example...
They can't skip a stop.
Yeah, simplified example would be a dungeon where every room and every corridor only has two doors. The one you came in... and the only one you can leave by. I mean, that's a horribly simple example, but the players can only go one direction, right? They can't go off on a sidetrack. They can't kind of climb up a ladder. They can only go the way the GM has prepared.
I mean, you don't even have to make it that simplistic, because you could say that in order to defeat Monster X, you need item Y. So that means you're controlling. The players need to get this item before they can beat this monster. Mm-hmm. And they need something from that monster to beat the next one. I mean, it doesn't even need to be, like, doors, but, like, basically you staggered the encounters.
Right. A pure ball of twine one would even be, you have to get item X to defeat monster Y, and wizard A has that item.
Like a World of Warcraft.
Yeah, exactly, like a World of Warcraft. Like, if you... It could be sand...
Oh,
it could
World of Warcraft is ball of twine.
Yeah, totally.
Okay. Yeah, I would probably say.
Of course, that's that I haven't played before, but, anyway.
Yeah, if you set up the story to be, you need this item from this monster...
I don't know enough to debate you on that, although I'm in a debating mood.
Yeah, I noticed.
I can hear that.
Well, yeah. Anyway, if you said, if the storyteller said...
Vocal eye rolls are great.
You need this item from that monster to make that artifact, that could be very sandboxy. If you don't give the players sort of any paths that they have to follow, they're free to... get that item or sort of defeat that monster or however they want. So
back up. Did you just say they need this item to defeat this monster?
Well, they need to defeat this monster.
What do you mean they can get it however they want? Like, isn't the item going to be in this one location?
Well, yeah, the item would be with this monster, but the sort of the storyteller hasn't defined how they need to go get that item.
But if it's in that, they need to go to the monster and get it.
Yeah, but they could... Like, they don't... saying there's different...
But
there's
ball
different
of twine doesn't mean that you have to... Okay, you have to kill the monster. Because if you have social characters or whatever, they could steal it.
Well, exactly.
They could convince it, but that doesn't make it sandbox.
No, that doesn't make it sandbox.
Okay.
I would argue that's a well-planned-out ball of
twine. Oh,
okay.
Twine, I thought you said that was sandbox.
No, you go from point A to point B, but there's no set path in the middle that the players must follow.
Interesting.
Except to go to point A.
I mean, how they get there hasn't been planned out. I think purely ball of twine, everything has already been planned out by the storyteller, by the GM, almost.
Yeah.
I'm saying on the extreme side of the
scale. I disagree with that, but we've spent a lot of time on the definition so far, so...
All right.
So mixed formats.
Yeah, I was reading an article online a little bit ago, and it was saying how the one guy does sandboxes. Where it, as in multiple sandboxes, where there's set steps along the path to the goal, but each step there, it's kind of like its own created little thing, and it's intended that the players spend some time there and do whatever they want. their own side adventures, make up their own stories, which is very sandboxy, even though it's on a string towards a set goal.
So it almost sounds like the person sets up little zones or areas.
A goal
that
is
the players
like,
can
I,
be.
Again, I'm going to bring up a goal is fine for both of them.
I agree. So like I don't maybe
like there has to be a point, you know, to either game.
Oh,
like,
right.
Why are you there? What are you doing?
To have fun.
Well, okay. I don't know. Yeah. Like we say that, and I very much agree with what you're saying. But I could also envision a group where they just really enjoy like getting into character and having social interactions, and maybe there is an overreaching story, and they're
the
fine.
Players
with that.
Can provide.
No, but I still
provide the goals, but the goals shouldn't
goal.
Be a, yeah. Exactly. It shouldn't be like a mystery. It's like, what are you guys going to do?
Yeah, and I agree. I could see a group that could really enjoy that, but. Also, GM just starting a game saying, hey, we're going to play this, and then not do anything to prep for it, that's just sounds like leading to a lousy game.
Yeah.
So speaking of prep, I was actually going to disagree with you a little bit, Lyle, about...
surprise, surprise.
Yeah, surprise, surprise. About mm-hmm. how... what did you say? Which one did you say was more difficult to prepare for?
I say Ball of Twine.
I kind of disagree with that a little bit.
Okay.
If you do a sandbox, okay, I'll say that with the caveat of, well planned Ball of Twine
right.
and well planned sandbox are probably about the same, in terms of the DM or storyteller preparation.
I think they are the same.
Okay.
Because like if you do sort of like a well planned out sandbox,
right,
you don't know where the players are going to go.
Right.
They could potentially go anywhere. So you, as the GM, have to sort of be prepared for that. You have even if the little skeleton idea of each sort of location that or place or NPC that the players could go to, you kind of have to be able to. Maybe it's just my style of setting things up, but sort of the more notes or the more information you set yourself up with before the game session,
mm-hmm.
then the easier that makes the session run. Where I guess it's kind of the same with. Ball of Twine, like a well-planned Ball of Twine that doesn't feel like a Ball of Twine would be kind of difficult to create as well.
No, I guess what I mean is like you really can't plan for every possibility if you're playing a very reactive game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you probably shouldn't try, so therefore the game master just needs to be very adaptable, you know,
which is
be able to respond to what the players say and be very adaptable and flexible.
That's the trait of a good game master.
Right, so really like if they decide to go to this tavern and not that tavern, or if they decide to go to the police station out of the blue all of a sudden, I'm sure you're not going to have extensive notes on that police station. So most of what you'll be doing in that situation is making stuff up on the fly. But because, and I did say it's more difficult to run, because it is more difficult to make up stuff on the fly. Now, you might have, like, you know, here's the stock police officers, and maybe you made up two detectives... named detectives for that city, and they happen to go to the precinct, so suddenly those detectives make an appearance.
See, I see the same thing, you know, in a Ball of Twine, you know, you go to the police station, he says, well, you need to go see Detective Miller downstairs. In a sandbox, maybe the players say, all right, well, we'll go upstairs next, and hey, look, Detective Miller's there by chance.
To me, that's a bit more like a Ball of Twine.
That's what he said.
Yeah. No, but I think you said in a sandbox, they go upstairs.
I see, like, if you make 10 NPCs in a Ball of Twine, like, the NPCs direct you to go to the next one, whereas in a sandbox, maybe they just meet those NPCs regardless of where they are.
Okay.
If there's somebody who's important to meet for the story.
But I also say, like, that was one way to use preparation to meet the player's decisions, but I think a lot of times you'll just be making stuff up, and
yeah.
you'll be using stock NPCs or just, like, little stats.
Mm-hmm. Or sometimes
you
don't have the stats.
Yeah, because you might plan this elaborate... I mean, in a Ball of Twine, you have the luxury of planning these elaborate encounters where you can populate and have a stat line for... have a personality and stat line for everybody in the encounter because you know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
In a sandbox, you can't. So unless you have no job and have the luxury of time to spend on each building and every part of the city and or
then you really should go and like work for a game design company
something like that. Yeah, well, if they have no story like someone suggests, then you should.
All right, man, I'm just never gonna live that down, am I? Well, I was gonna say what I did for Changeling is all the major NPCs I did a little 3x5 card of them in terms of just kind of like appearance, attitude, and kind of a little bit about personality.
Right.
And I also kind of decided what their goals would be, because I think that's the difficult part of running.
Did you make up any NPCs on the fly?
On the fly, just what I would call extras. The only NPCs I made up with, I would call extras. Sort of
right.
People that didn't really get a description.
Because I would say in a sandbox, if you've made up a lot of your NPCs on the fly, if you're playing a game and you find that you've made up a lot of your NPCs on the fly, maybe that's a sandbox game.
Yeah,
because you're responding to what the players are or aren't interested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's easier to run a sandbox in a short-term game, like if you only have 4 hours, because it's a lot easier to...
Really? Oh, because I was just about to ask, which game do you think plays better? Or which style is better for which kinds of games?
Well, I think Chris specifically said run. He said it's easier to run a sandbox game for a short thing.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Well, that's what I...
Okay. Okay.
Sorry,
so run. Okay. I was confused if you meant run or play in.
Okay, I meant run.
Okay. I just think that... Because if you're doing a shorter session, like only 4 hours or so, that's a sandbox is much easier to do in a shorter session. Because, first off, if you are reacting to players' ideas, then you have to improv a lot, and it's easier to improv for 4 hours than it is for 8 hours or whatever.
I'll agree. Sorry.
And also, if players find some NPCs that they like, it gives you time. Maybe you can just stall a little bit and then come back with a statted up version of them later.
Sorry, but what do you mean by a 4 hour session? Do you mean like a 4 hour session of an ongoing campaign?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. Not like a con game or something.
Like okay, because so I would say like a ball of twine is much better for a one shot.
Totally agree completely. Okay, yeah.
For a convention, because I think games need endings. Even a sandbox game.
That silence was the dagger look Lyle gave me.
Jesus. Oh, man.
I was joking.
Yeah.
Poison daggers.
Yeah. Your mouth may say, I was joking. Your eyes definitely did not.
I
think
a little pause there.
But anyway, I...
So, because I was going to say... So, yeah, I was... Because I thought you meant, like, for a one-shot.
Yeah, not the case, though. I
didn't know. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, because definitely for a one-shot or a convention game, the mm-hmm. ball of twine is the best thing to do.
Yeah, totally.
Because games need endings.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually...
But I'm not sure... I can't say that I'm not sure I agree with you on like, just a four-hour session mm-hmm. of an ongoing campaign that a sandbox is better.
Maybe I misspoke when I was saying that. I'm saying that if you're running a sandbox campaign, it's probably easier with shorter sessions than with longer sessions.
Oh, okay.
Sessions.
Now I understand.
Yeah. Yes.
And I definitely agree with you there, because you're only going to be able to do stuff on the fly
mm-hmm. for so long.
Yeah. Then players are going to make one thing about a sandbox game, everybody needs to be aware that it's a sandbox game. And
very
same with Ball
so.
Of Twine. Hmm. Because then I think in either game, it can be disastrous if players aren't aware of what style of game it is. Because in A Ball of Twine, they'll start to think, why are we just being railroaded mm-hmm. along?
And that's true. That could lead to a lot of player dissatisfaction.
Right. Mm-hmm. Whereas people would buy into it. Oh, no, I understand. We're leading this stuff, and that's just the style of game. And in the sandbox, you could have players like, when is the story going to start?
Mm.
You know, when is the NPC going to walk through the door? To kind of move this game along.
Totally. Which was, with Changeling, that was... And it was totally my bad in that. I just didn't realize.
Well, yes, it was my fault for not saying this was going to be a sandbox. But I definitely agree with shorter is much easier to run. Because
mm-hmm.
the first couple of sessions were about 6 hours. And like after about 2 hours, I just had to completely throw out my notes. Because you guys had gone so far off what I expected you to do that I was, ad-libbing and just... You know, pulling stuff out of thin air for like four hours, and that got pretty tiring.
Hey, you did it well, though.
Oh, all right, thanks. But
so you mentioned just a second ago about different games. Do you think there are any games that lend themselves to sandbox or linear? Like you said, Tom mentioned that you can't sandbox in 4E.
Yeah. No, and I was wondering what
Which
you guys.
I don't think I necessarily agree with, but
Now I never got clarification, but if I was going to imagine what he meant by that is just that. The game, like 4E D&D, and perhaps Dungeons & Dragons in general,
mm-hmm.
is very much match the power level of the encounters, mm-hmm. of the monsters and the villains, to the players' levels.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to plan that out. And if players go, well, hey, I heard, you know, let's go find a dragon and kill it. And you're like, well, you guys are too weak to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, the adaptation in the sandbox could be, yeah, all of the trials and tribulations and the story to get to that dragon. Of course, all of that's designed to get the players high enough to be able to, you know, have a chance against it. You know, be able to defeat the dragon.
He was going to say...
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I
think that's what he meant.
But I would say for a sandbox style of game, is better for if you have players that like to do a lot of social interaction and have a lot of social skills and abilities, definitely, because it's hard to plan and to force your players to role play and to do social things.
Especially in 4E.
I think in any game, it's like, okay, now please shine. You know, you've got that leadership ability. Please be a leader now.
Yeah, you kind of like shove the microphone in front of people.
Exactly.
And some people,
that's a good, yeah, that's
some
a good
people
example.
Run with
yeah.
it. Some people just kind of freeze up. Some people alternate between the two.
Yeah. No, I think
and you never know what you're going to get. So.
No, the microphone, that is a perfect analogy. Yeah. I may stop. Bringing up the no story comment.
Well, you didn't because you just did right there.
Sorry. Last time.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
I make no promises, though.
I cannot promise. No, that's great because, yeah, you shove the microphone. Now, please be social.
Yeah.
And some players might freeze up even if they've designed a
social character.
Yeah. Whereas in a sandbox, it's like when they're ready, you know, when they feel like going off and doing that thing and then really developing it. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, in a ball of twine, they can do a little mini sidetrack. Oh, I think I'm going to woo the princess. But if it doesn't lead to anything, or no, it won't impact the story, then it is just a little sidetrack for that player.
Yeah.
Whereas sandbox, then you can see how much they want to do with things and then start working it into the story, the main story.
I was going to say...
We were talking about trying to make your D&D, well, I guess it's not D&D anymore, but your fantasy campaign, when that restarts, to make it more like a Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Which is a very political story.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Song of Ice and Fire, a very political story. And how to do that. And it can be done in a fantasy setting. I mean...
Well, look at Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Duh. Yeah.
I'm going to put that one in my pocket and that's going to be a goddamn story thing.
That modern cyberpunk Game of Thrones.
No, but I was going to say, yeah, I think the point you're trying to make is that would almost have to be sandbox.
Yeah, that was the point
you have all these factions and nobles, and they all have their own goals and agendas, and they're all going to fit together in different ways, and based on where the players go and what they do, that'll change
the things
the
that they put in action is how it's going to... is how the story is going to unfold.
Basically, I think if you tried to do that as a ball of twine game, like the dungeon masters or the game master's sort of crib notes would look like an impossible to decipher flowchart. Because, okay, if they do A, then B will happen, and then this will happen over here. And
not necessarily, though, because like in the Game of Thrones, that's if you're playing like the big movers and the shakers, which is a given. Most players would want to be play nobles and kings like that. But if you're playing a more like maybe servant level or peddler, maybe just a regular knight, then you could have it where just the big events that are going on are out of your control. They're above you. You know, like the Lannisters are still going to go
I know what you're saying. But I think that's kind of separate from whether it's Ball of Twine or Sandbox. Is like how much you're affecting the world's story, if you will.
But that is one of the pitfalls of Ball of Twine is that players might like if the storyteller has already set out the sort of the path that's going to happen. Then the players could feel as if, yeah, you know what, our actions don't have any effect on the world around us, and we're just kind of getting shunted along, right?
Yeah, no, and it also brings up a good point, is that in a ball of twine, you can plan the encounters if they're like more combat-oriented, because if you go into the room and there's the dragons there, the idea is you're going to kill the dragon.
Right.
Maybe
Or die,
yeah, maybe the players will fail, and then, you know, I'm sorry, like, the game's over, but, you know, hopefully
Or they run away.
But
then they have to come back later. Yeah. It's like you don't advance until you beat this dragon.
Yeah, so the story advances, but it's an advancing one way because you're beating the dragon. So maybe that's the end, but like, or because you're beating the dragon to get the two stones using Sucker Punch that are going to be used to kill the Lich King. Whereas in a social game, and even if you're like you're playing a servant or you're playing a noble, here's the situation. If we look at Podrick Payne.
Yeah.
Sir Podrick Payne, maybe. Did he get knighted? He was a squire. No, he's a squire. Squire. And he's the imp squire. And is he going to be loyal to this guy or not loyal to this guy? And those choices that this person encounters. Are you going to be a noble squire or are you going to be a backstabbing squire? Mm. Like even those small choices affects his story.
Mm.
And it could branch off in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
And maybe this is where we got into the semantics debate over whether we call it a goal or a conclusion or an ending. And what I would say in either game, Ball of Twine or Sandbox, they have an ending. Ball of Twine much more defined in that the ending is you're going to go kill this Lich King.
Mm-hmm. Right.
For example. Sandbox, perhaps you kill the Lich King because that's the major villain. Perhaps you serve the Lich King. Perhaps you set up where somebody else kills the Lich King. You know, all these different branches because the story is so open. But you do, the Lich King's a problem.
Mm-hmm. And he's dealt with.
Yeah, and how do you deal with him? Do you not deal with him? Yeah, maybe that's...
Maybe the solution is you just leave the city and go somewhere else.
Yeah, and then the game master's kind of scratching their head going, oh, great, again.
Man, how many cities have you left?
In a case like that, I mean, yeah, it's funny, but that's the players walking away from the story.
Yeah.
Which is one of the pitfalls for Sandbox.
Yeah, you have to make because, the story clear.
Because things are so open that players could pretty much do whatever they want.
I say if you're doing a Sandbox story, the first session or
should be Ball of Twine.
Yeah, no, exactly. Well, think of it like you're playing in the Sandbox, but there's an angry dog, and the angry dog starts chasing you.
So you leave the Sandbox.
And it chases you out of the Sandbox into Ball of Twine. No.
No, but tie it up with the sorry.
No, basically, or there's like a boulder. If you think about Raiders of the Lost Ark, is somehow the story starts with that boulder rolling down and Indiana Jones running from it. Now, what he does and he leaps out and he leaps out of the cave or whatever. I don't know.
Well, you know, I think that's I know that we definitely agree on that because all of our campaigns, Sandbox or not, they've all started out with I think of starting saying, "Yeah, sorry, this first session is going to be really railroady, guys. I hope you are right with that."
Yeah, there's not a lot. Yeah, the most recent one I'm running the hard boiled game.
Yeah, same thing.
A lot of apologies. Like, yeah, you guys might feel a little constrained, and the reason was just trying to capture the mood of hard boiled is that the players are kind of get locked into a situation, and then you're kind of just shot out. Now, how you react to it afterwards? I mean, it doesn't mean you just stay on that car. You can actually stop the car, but. So yeah. What do you do? But you're still being chased. So if you stop the car, you're going to get out, and the story's still going. Yeah. It's just how you resolve the story.
A well-built ball of twine. The players never feel constricted. They never feel like, well, I guess sometimes they feel like they have no choice. But even in that hard-boiled game, like as players and characters, we had a choice, right?
Yeah.
If there were bad choices, I mean, the choice was either go along with this thing or get shot.
Yeah.
But the choice was there, and you know, we could have chosen to say, you know what, I do this, and you end up with a bullet in your head, and, you know, story over, but...
And this is why I probably think Ball of Twine is harder to plan, is that the players should feel that the next encounter is the logical choice. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very difficult to plan.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I was going to say a well-built ball of twine.
Yeah, exactly. Are they going to feel the next one's an illogical choice? That's just bad storytelling.
No, but I was going to say, it is.
Can't you see that? It's like, because the danger of the ball of twine is that players are going to feel like they're railroaded and that any decision they make doesn't influence the story, so why bother making any decisions?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, a well-planned ball of twine maybe even incorporates a little bit the player's decisions and their actions in each encounter. Mm-hmm. But those decisions are then used to kind of build that bridge to the next encounter or build that link to the next encounter so that the players feel that they're contributing to the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in either ball of twine or sandbox, players should always feel like they're contributing to the story. It's just in sandbox, they're contributing more.
Yeah.
And ball of twine, they're contributing less. But they should never feel like what they're doing is irrelevant.
Yeah. Linear is good, but railroading is not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why
to boil it down to have some.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I think that is difficult. I think that is more difficult to plan to make the players feel like what in a ball of twine that their decisions matter. So, whereas in sandbox, it's a lot easier for the players to feel that. The danger is they would feel like the player the Game Master showed up with no story, and it's all up to me or you or us to kind of to give this thing life.
I think,
and then you kind of like, oh, geez, this is putting a lot of like the onus on me.
Yeah. I think it's more difficult to plan a good ball of twine story.
Okay, if you want to need if you need to add good to that.
Well, yeah, I think you do because like. Like,
well, I would argue that it's not difficult at all to make a bad story.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So any bad story is not difficult.
I can handle that.
But is that ball of twine, sandbox? Whatever. You choose. Yeah, yeah. You choose. It's still bad.
No, because the storyteller, the GM, they either have to, in a ball of twine, they either have to make the player's choices seem logical, or not the player's choices seem logical, but they have to present the logical choice, or they have to make it feel like it was kind of a decision that the players made.
Well, I think a good example in just a recent one is when we played your most recent Hex session. Hollowed Earth Expedition session.
Right.
I felt that I did not feel railroaded, even though it was at a convention, and it was you only had about 3-4 hours.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that all the moving to the next encounter and the next encounter, even though I was buying into it was a ball of twine and I completely understood, I did not feel railroaded.
That's also partly because it was well designed. I mean, you're on a ship and there's an island in front of you.
That's what I'm saying. So there's a good case in point where, but I happen to know, Wayne, that you put a lot of planning into that.
Yeah.
Into that particular session. And for a 3-4 hour session, I would say, I would argue that you, and probably because it was a convention game, I would argue that you put more planning into that 3 or 4 hours than you put into 8-12 hours of your Changeling game.
Yeah, probably.
And the reason was is because you wanted each encounter to logically flow into the other. And it seems like I'm just trying to win this point. So you could easily just shut me up by saying, yes, Lyle, you're right.
No, you are
it
right.
Is more,
because, well, no, you are right
and
about...
And I'll stop bringing it up.
Okay, you are right about that because...
Can I just be contrarian?
Like, I didn't... In that one, like, I wanted the... Yeah, there was a set path I wanted
our
the players to go
on. Our 2-hour episode. Right?
I didn't want the players...
Lyle would not let it go.
No, sorry. Like I didn't want the players to like go off and explore all these things.
Yeah, because you land on a beach, right, you want the players to go in a particular direction.
So you just kind of give them logical choices where, they you guys
or stay on the beach. Yeah,
could have gone anywhere, right? You could have gone left, right, center, any way you want on the beach. But I specifically set up an event that would be interesting enough where you guys would say, "Let's go check that out," which is exactly where I wanted you to go.
Right.
And some of us didn't get it. There was like a glint off in the distance, and one of the players Christos didn't put two and two together. This was a crashed plane.
He knew. He was just making jokes the whole time.
I didn't pick
up on
that.
Is it the glint that crashed the plane?
Yeah.
All right. So, we've touched on a few of the pitfalls. I think the main pitfall, I would say, for Sandbox is people... assuming that means no story, or the story isn't clear enough.
Yeah.
Because I think if players are in a sandbox game, they want the game to be very reactive, and they want to have more input than, say, in a ball of twine game, but they shouldn't feel like there's no story. Like, when they walk in the city, there should be, like, an overarching reason why. So, I mean, obviously, there's a pitfall for sandbox. The obvious solution is, make sure you have a story.
Yeah, and make sure that your characters have something that they can do. Like, when we were talking about Changeling, I had a character that I had a background that I had to keep secret. And that was just a very bad choice for a sandbox game.
Well, it wasn't so much, it was the fact that you didn't make up any lies. It was that you just said, I don't want to talk about it, or I don't want to do this, or don't want to do that. So you had... You brought a character with a lot of secrets, which is fine, but he also had no motivations, and didn't provide like a cover story.
Yeah.
So then it was, we can talk about, people like having the traitor character in a party, because that deserves its own episode.
Yeah.
But just the fact there was nothing to grab onto. So and then if we have, I found that a little frustrating in Changeling. It was very sandbox, and I had a lot of control over what my player did, which is great, and had a lot of input into the story. But then it kind of felt I was dragging the other players along.
Yeah, I'll totally make up with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, as a storyteller, it was a little bit difficult, because there was one point where Like, I actually used mechanics to sort of find out what all your characters wanted.
Yeah.
So I could write something into the story and be like, okay, this is going to be a good hook for Lyle's character. It's going to be a good hook for Yujiro's character. It's going to be a good hook for Chris's character. And to kind of, like, to try and drop that to get you guys interested. And I believe your character, you wrote a little note, Chris, and it said, I don't know what I want.
I don't know what to do
to get you interested in the story.
I don't think I gave you enough advanced stuff. I mentioned about a brother.
And
going to Auschwitz as a veteran. Never came up.
Well, that's probably for different reasons. But yeah, the pitfall in that we discussed was as a storyteller, I don't think I fed you enough, as a group, enough interesting hooks.
We started to get a really interesting story towards the end, but that was about the time when we were deciding to put the campaigns on hold to do a series of shorter games. But then we were getting like that traitor and information, so that was really interesting. The mannequin was interesting, and following that storyline, like that probably would have been the storyline we pursued, like helping that person reassemble their body, because that was very creepy, unusual. You could see somebody going mad, you know, having their body replaced by mannequin parts. Enough about Changeling.
Yeah. Sidetrack.
What about, and of course, then we also, was there any other pitfalls you think in Sandbox?
No, you know, I was about to say something about like how you should have the characters be able to work as a group, maybe design them together as a group, but there's no reason that you shouldn't do that for Ball of Twine as well.
No, but I see your point, though. I was talking about Sandbox, but I do see your point if you have players then who go off and do individual stuff, then that can get very disjointed. And that's why you should have like some sort of major story, or try to weave everybody's individual motivations into a major story so that it'll come back, you know, and it draws people back, or the other players have a motivation to work together on certain things. Mm-hmm. And that's why I said it's hard to run a sandbox game, because you're constantly weaving in the players' decisions and the players' actions, weaving it into the main story.
Yeah.
And weaving their own stories into the main story. So it doesn't just become, I mean, it's great that it branches off, but you want it to kind of branch off in one main direction, not into four or five different directions that it would reach the point where why should the group come together? Because absolutely. It's just like, okay, Tuesday is Wayne's night to do this. Wednesday is Chris's
then
night
you just
to do
have
his.
A bunch of individual nights. You don't even need the group to show up.
Yeah.
So I think that's why you said before, or maybe Chris said, it's kind of a little bit more important to give the players of the group or the characters of the group a very strong reason to stay together.
Give them that angry dog to chase them.
Rawr.
Now you guys didn't like that.
Well,
metaphor.
I see what you're saying.
I picture Sandbox as being something very small, so it's a really dangerous.
Actually, to use your angry dog.
I saw like kids playing in the sandbox, and this angry dog comes in.
But
like, let's go.
But like in a sandbox, right? The kids could all run different directions when the dog chases them.
Yeah.
Right. The dog jumps in the sandbox. The kids all run different directions.
Dog
right.
Them.
Okay,
the sheepdog.
All right, anyway, the point is, it's a lot easier for the players to stay together.
It's not really an angry dog, it's a very organized dog.
Man, you hear that? That's the sound of a dead dog getting beat, because you just won't let the metaphor die. Anyway, I lost the point I was going to say. It doesn't matter.
No, it's funny.
Sheepdog.
No, but I think I hear what you're saying, that you have to be careful with a conflict that it doesn't split up the party.
Or not even conflict, just sometimes... I mean, sometimes players just have such wildly different goals, or it's just completely different characters, that if they don't have a strong reason to stay together, that they're just not going to.
And I think that's a piece of advice that I'd have for anybody trying to run a sandbox campaign, is to give the characters a reason to stay together.
Didn't I say that? Before we got sidetracked on the
sheepdog
thing?
Yeah, I think you were saying that.
Oh, okay. I was trying to say it.
I just said it more eloquently.
I mean, that's not to say you shouldn't do it for a linear game.
For example, you could say, like, if a player takes an interest in a barmaid or a princess, it turns out it's actually the sister of another player, and they didn't know.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, maybe it's in a brothel, and it's like, oh, I thought you were dead. And then now you got two players interested in it.
I don't know. Or to borrow one from our seduction thing. So have the NPC fall in love with a different player character.
Ooh, triangle.
And now you have, like, a love triangle. But you still have kept those people together. You've possibly generated a lot of conflict.
Right. Well, and I guess the main pitfall of Ball of Twine, we already talked about it, is making it feel like it's a railroad game. And that's why a lot of people refer to Ball of Twine games more often, actually, as they're a railroad game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or they're being railroaded.
Yeah, but if you're a sort of like a clever GM or
exactly, it's a pitfall, so it actually shouldn't, which is why we don't refer to them as railroad.
Yeah, you can always have an event to get the players back on track, so to speak.
And if you weave it into the
story well enough, then they don't really know that they've sort of been herded back onto the track.
I would say, like, in the 4E D&D campaign that we played, it was a ball of twine, but there was only one instance where I felt like I was being railroaded.
Which was?
The fourth battle with the Hobgoblins, which we didn't do. And I actually said, I don't think my character would do it, and I actually don't really want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems like it's a distraction from the main story.
Mm-hmm.
So we would act, and that we're being anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
So if the main bad guy, knows we're going to be here, then that means he can do stuff in the city. So that's why I said, we would like to go back to the city.
And you were totally right, too.
Yeah. And you responded to it. So it was kind of like the one instance of kind of chafing at the ball of twine.
Mm-hmm.
But then Chris was...
That said, though, like, I guessed that you were going to go back to the city, so I prepped that way.
But I did give you a heads up. But I thought that was a good idea. That was a good example of the players and the game master working together, where it never went off track.
Yeah. So for example, if Chris, it didn't derail. Yeah. If you had thrown stuff at us where we had to stay and fight those hobgoblins,
mm-hmm.
then that would have been sort of like a bad case of railroading.
Yeah, it would have been.
You didn't do that.
We would have gone through the motions and done it, and then moved on. But you allowed us to skip that encounter,
mm-hmm.
to do more in the city, and that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was back on to the main story, and everybody was happy.
Yeah.
So even when the I guess the solution there is, if you're in a ball of twine and the whole thing feels like a railroad, then that's just a bad game. But, you know, sometimes, you know, you're a player and you kind of get to a point where you're kind of chafing. Just let the game master know.
Yeah.
And then a good game master then will make the adjustments. Not changing the story, but making the adjustments so that your decision maybe has more impact than it would normally. Your reaction has more impact than it would normally. Or you just decide to scrap an encounter and skip ahead and make that logical bridge.
Well, I think, you know, taking that into account, when we were saying there's kind of like a scale between sandbox and linear, even if you're planning a very ball of twiny campaign, you shouldn't plan only that string. Get some stuff around it, because players do stuff. They don't know what your string is. You know, they could go off on a sidetrack. You should have at least something to give them.
Yeah, that's why I would almost argue that a pure ball
different
of twine...
colored string.
Yeah, I think like a pure ball of twine would be a novel or passive entertainment, because the people watching it or reading the book can't change the story.
It'll work at a dungeon delve where, you know, there's only a couple of doors getting down to the bottom. But...
Well, you know, even that, because, like, you go back to my original example, you don't want to enter a dungeon where each room or corridor only has two doors.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
It's just one long...
Yeah, exactly. That's all it would be, one long thing, and you have to do these in order. Or, like, a good dungeon, right? Even though it's one set location, there's a bunch of doors leading all to different places, and the players can go to, like, point A, then E, then Z, then they don't have to go in order. So.
But in either game, as long as you're communicating with the storyteller what you're happy with and are not happy with, then you're going to have a good story. Even in the sandbox, I mean, you're like, okay, I'm lost.
Yeah.
You know, what are we really supposed to do? Like, I'll keep doing what I'm doing, but... Yeah. Is there any reason for us to work together?
Yeah.
And then the game master was like, oh, yeah, I should probably make a little bit clear this, you know, the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you're going back to the Game of Thrones, if you're playing a Game of Thrones, you're just going to tournaments and doing stuff, and all these
massive backstories going on.
And you're just kind of missing it, and then the guy's like, spoiler alert, the king's hand died, so are you going to do anything about that? And you're like, I guess
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm cool. There's a tournament next week.
Yeah, but on the
I'm trying to marry this prostitute.
Yeah,
this prostitute.
On the other hand, it could be, dude, I'm a hedge knight. What do you expect me to do about the king's hand dying?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, so obviously there's got to be something. Then the game master's like, oh, yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to connect, you know, but you thought you were the bastard son of this guy, but you're not really the bastard. You are, blah, 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 you know. So you're actually related to the king's hand.
Oh!
What? That could have been made clear. All right. Well, I guess there's some agreement at the end. So
at the end. Like, we reached a goal. Doesn't matter how we got there.
We reached a conclusion. A conclusion.
Very nice. Very nice.
So right. Just like any good game, as long as the ending's good, then, or a movie, then players will walk away probably remembering that more than anything.
Yeah, but I suppose, you know, to wrap it all up is be clear with your players and make sure that your players are clear with you about what you expect to do for the game, what they expect to get out of it. No, yeah, everybody can have more fun that way.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thanks for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Please check us out online, www.idleredhands.com. Post in the forums, like us on Facebook, and all that other good stuff.
All right. See you next week.
Bye. Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.